Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Rog this morning. Morena, how are you?
Matamaria, very well, Rachel, thank you.
It's great to have you on the show. We are so close to this whole election season being done and done with now, and I'm sure everybody will be quite relieved on Sunday morning to be able to not have to think about it much, at least in terms of getting out and voting. We'll just have to think about what the potential government's going to look like, which is something we will talk about in a second. But I wanted to start by having a bit of a chat about some of the differences we've seen this year in the way the election's played out, most significantly being the number of people who have early voted, which is shaping up to be the largest number ever. How are you feeling about this?
I'm very excited about that, and I'm really quite fascinated because we haven't had the same pressure here to vote early because we doubt whether our vote's going to be counted or in other ways abused, which is obviously a very dominant feeling in the US.
Mm.
And I must admit, when I walked into the polling station in a local community hall on Tuesday in Auckland on my way to the airport, I actually got quite emotional about it. It's not just because it's wonderful to vote, but I realized I could have gone to any polling booth in the country and have been able to vote, which is completely remarkable. And I had this utter certainty that my vote would be counted, and I got to choose four things, two referendums, an electoral vote and a party vote, and I just felt really good about that.
I know the feeling.
I'm just fascinated that so many people have early voted, and I'm taking that as a sign of a real engagement. I'm wondering if and this is purely a guess on my part, absolutely a guess, I'm wondering if it's a sign we might have a somewhat heavier turnout this time than in recent elections.
It would be obviously great to have a bigger turnout. That's what you want every year, is more and more people voting. But one thing that people have talked about is this is kind of changing the nature of what Election Day actually is. It's now sort of looking like the last day to vote rather than the focus of all of the attention across this period. Do you think that's something we will see continuing forward into the future? A lot of this has been, prompted a bit by COVID, trying to encourage people to get out and vote early so there's not big crowds and there's not lots of, waiting around, if that's something that people are concerned about still at the moment. Do you think that this is something we'll see continuing into the future?
Yes, I think so. And I'm all for that, as long as that window for voting doesn't become too wide, because I think it is important that genuinely there will be votes in play right up to the last minute as people are making up their minds. I would want to see the opportunity for politicians to still be able to change minds before people have voted. So I'm hoping that when people are voting early, there'll obviously be elements of convenience there because of, they might be travelling or whatever. But I hope they're just not voting early because they're just fed up with the whole thing and just want to be done with it. and therefore, denying politicians the opportunity to change those minds by campaigning effectively and vigorously.
Mm. I wonder what your thoughts are on the possibility of four-year terms, because currently we have three-year terms for our parliament. And I'm curious about what your thoughts are on this, because it's something that's popped up a bit recently.
I'm all for a four-year term because it does give the incumbent government more time to do things rather than it feels like essentially only a year in the middle between in a three-year term where they are actually really focused on what they're doing. But I want to raise a bigger point about this, though, is that the issues we're dealing with in society roll over far longer than any parliamentary term could ever be. And therefore, it's really important for us as a society to be able to agree on some common goals and some broad ways we're going to do that. And therefore, the election only becomes about a delivery, who's delivering that best. In recent decades, I think Ireland's been a very good example where there's been that sort of broad consensus across society about where they're going to go and broadly how they're going to do it. So a four-year term won't solve that problem that we seem to toy with the idea of flipping backwards and forwards on all sorts of issues as we change parties and change government leadership. So yes to a longer term to get more done, but let's keep working on the consensus about those long-term issues and how we're going to deal with them.
The other thing I wanted to get your thoughts on is another big topic that kind of comes up as elections come up, and that is lowering the voting age. 16 is the age that people tend to campaign on. Do you agree with the idea of lowering the voting age?
Yes, I do, very much so. First of all, young people these days, many of them, are far better informed and far more tuned into what's going on and have far more ideas about what they believe needs to be done. And I think they should have an opportunity to feel they're part of that process. The other thing that I'd couple it with, though, would be a very, very strong need for really good civics teaching and sort of practice in schools so that those young people are better informed and understand more fully how the whole political process works and what role they're playing in it. So yes to voting at a much younger age, laying good groundwork for those people.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted to talk about is what might happen after Saturday. So once all the votes are counted and we get some sort of majority for one party, and then, of course, all of our minor parties will have stakes in the game as well, something that's been discussed recently a lot is the potential for, if Labor gets a majority and the Greens manage to make that 5% threshold, what a coalition between those two parties might look like, and if indeed that is something that might happen. What do you think about that?
I don't want to try and second guess what the election results are going to be, except that our polls are reasonably accurate, and I think the one thing we're not too sure about is exactly which side of the 5% the Greens will end up on. But I think, so we I can be pretty sure it's going to be a Labour-led government. And the chances that it's going to be in a coalition or some sort of support agreement with Greens, I think, is a reasonably obvious bet. Then the next thing is, of course, they go into negotiations, and I wouldn't even want to try and second-guess that. But I think there's been a lot of interesting comment around that the Greens would be better served not in a formal coalition because that rather locks them in, but in a supply and confidence agreement and with some deal around various policies they're going to agree to disagree on, so Labour can still try and get some of those things done without them, if that's possible numbers-wise, but just keep it that kind of framework rather than a formal coalition.
Could you just explain the difference briefly between a formal coalition and a confidence and supply? Because I'm sure there's a lot of confusion out there. I always get a bit confused myself with what those two things actually mean.
Yes, and again, I stress that I'm a business journalist, not a political journalist, and therefore I don't have all the intricacies of this at my fingertips. But basically, as I understand it, if you're in a formal coalition agreement, you have to agree to everything that the government does. And that obviously puts you in a very difficult position on some issues that where you have some significant differences. But on the other hand, the benefit of going into a full coalition is that you might get more ministers from your party, but more importantly, they would be fully in government, in cabinet, not ministers outside cabinet. And then lastly, you would have the opportunity to possibly persuade the major party that your leader should be the deputy prime minister, which is obviously what Peters did last time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's pluses and minuses in there. But I think from a Greens point of view, they would be able to be truer to their values and have some greater flexibility if they weren't in a formal coalition. But again, I'm theorising here. I stress I'm not a political journalist. I'm not, really close to all the stuff that's going on.
It's still very interesting to think about, at least, and appreciate your time this morning, Rod, as well.
We'll talk.
What was that? Sorry.
Carry on. Yeah.
No.
We look forward to talking again.
Yes.
And I'm sorry about the background noise. I'm at Christchurch Airport.
Oh, well, say hello to my hometown for me.
I just want to say I had a fabulous session with Professor Hayward in with wonderful students in an environment and politics class on Tuesday.
Oh, I'm very glad to hear that. Hey, thank you so much, Rod. I hope you have a lovely flight home, and we will talk to you on the other side of the election results at some point, and I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about then. Ka kite.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
See you.
Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.